Welcome everyone to a new episode of the Tech Podcast. An episode on Wednesday. We know it's Wednesday. We did it Wednesday. Seth and I, by the way, Seth is with me. Are you Seth?
I'm good.
Great. And we liked it last week that it was on Wednesday. So we figured, like, well, let's try to do it on Wednesday instead. Then on the end of the week when we were both a little bit tired, and just before leaving for the weekend. So we'll try out, at least for now, on Wednesday, see how it goes, see how it feels, and we'll adjust if there's need to. But for the meantime, we did it in the last Wednesday. We had a full week of news, or at least sort of, because there was a long weekend where there's not as much news as usual. But Elon kept us busy earlier this week with a bunch of things. I also went out on a road trip this weekend in a Tesla Model 3, which I did a post about, and we can discuss that a little bit because it was quite eventful, the road trip itself and my whole weekend, but that's probably another story. Let's start out with something strange that Elon said. Then he corrected it, but it's still, I think, an important news either way. It's that at first it sounded like he said, oh, no, sorry. I put another article first that I think because we mentioned it last week that I was going to update you on that. Let's start with that real quick because I just posted that about the goal to Tesla. Of course, last week posted their overall delivery number, 95,000 vehicle. Great result, record quarter and everything. But we were tracking deliveries in North America for the last month because Tesla was counting on the North American market to reach the global delivery record because, of course, sales in North America are easier at the end of the quarter because Tesla doesn't have to put a vehicle in transit for a long period of time to ship them to China and Europe and so on. And also
the federal tax credit.
Yeah, last quarter, since it was being halved again, that definitely had a huge impact. So they were aiming for 33,000 units, which in a single month for the North American market, it's extremely difficult to do. And to encourage employees to do it, they offered bonuses last month, $1,200 for sales employees, every sales employees, if they reach a 33,000 mark, 33,000. And for the first time, they also offered bonuses for delivery employees because deliveries appear to be the bottleneck. They're the logistical problem of getting the cars to consumers in all the different markets was going to be the issue here. And they offered a $550 bonus for all those employees. And it was the first time those employees were getting bonuses. So they were happy about that. And it did light a fire underneath them. And keep in mind that those employees, especially the sales employees here, they got their compensation cut significantly earlier this year in the whole sales online thing. Tesla removed all commission, which was a significant part of the compensation for many employees. So those bonuses were going to help them a lot to compensate for the reduction in their salaries since the beginning of the year. Now we learned that Tesla told employees that they were 200 units short of that 33,000 goal. And they didn't outright say that they're not getting bonuses, but they stopped mentioning it. It's not in their cards anymore. And employees, I'm told by several sources that they're not expecting them anymore. Which is kind of disappointing because there's nowhere around it that they did an incredible job. Almost 33,000 vehicles delivered last month. It's incredible. And from what I'm understanding, like, they were working nonstop, incredible hours to make this happen. I went myself to a Tesla store during the peak of the delivery rush during the last week of June. And all staff was all hands on deck delivering cars at high pace. And yeah. Investors made a lot of money from Tesla reaching their overall goal. So to set an ambitious, maybe overly ambitious goal of 33,000 units just for North American market and then have it cut short by just 100 units and not getting out the bonuses, that seems like not the right thing to do in my book. I'm still hoping that Tesla changes this and actually ends out the bonuses, or at least partial ones. The very least, but
yeah, they could prorate the bonus and
exactly easily, that's the easy math, right? It's not that difficult to do. And it's not that big. I mean, I don't know how many sales and delivery employees there are exactly in North America, but I mean, it's not in the tens of thousands. I mean, it wouldn't be that big of a check to write. Like, it would have an impact, of course, on Tesla financials, but not that big of one. And I think the impact on the morale of the employees, it would be bigger than the cost of ending out those bonuses. And I have to say, I'm not happy about the feedback on that news.
Oh, really?
It's quite disappointing from Tesla fans that are like, hey, they didn't reach your goal. Tesla shouldn't have to pay. Yes, but is it the right thing to do? Like, those employees are all people that are passionate about Tesla's mission. They worked extremely hard. Elon is often like very publicly, at least, very appreciative of the employees. Like, that was all on good job from the Tesla team and whatnot. I think that appreciation should also be represented in their financial compensation for the employees. I mean, I think it's just fair, especially when you take into account the fact that they just got their salary slash earlier this year, while Tesla was in a cash crunch. Tesla is not in a cash crunch anymore. They raised $1 billion. They just had an amazing quarter, thanks to the employees, and also, of course, the Tesla customers and whatnot. But in big part to the employees, wouldn't it be fair that they get compensated? I mean, it's $1,200, $500 for delivery employees for a quarter.
Yeah, they should get something. And they probably, like, Tesla should probably learn a lesson here and not give, you know, straight make it or break it bonuses. They
Good
should
point.
Give, you know, like, bonuses based on how many each person sells, or, you know, if Tesla sets the record globally where everybody's happy, then give the bonus out
globally.
Don't give the bonus out if they don't hit the record and everybody's pissed off.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's a kind of a weird situation where they blew by their record, yet the employees don't get the bonus.
Do you think there's any chance that they on purpose set the goal a little bit too high, and then they might have changed some logistical thing for the last 200 cars? Do you subscribe to that idea?
I would hope not, but I had heard that point mentioned a few times before even the quarter ended.
Yeah, I did too.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I did too. I don't think so because I think like every car makes a big difference for Tesla. So if they could have, they would have. I do think that the goal was extremely ambitious, which is why I think they should get their bonuses, because the fact that they came so close is impressive on its own. Yeah, those people are all passionate about the mission. They just got their salary cut. You just had the blowout quarter. Just pay the people. Pay them. Of course, now, well, I said I don't like the response from a lot of Tesla fans who are saying that Tesla is doing the right thing and not paying them because they didn't reach a call. Some of them, for just posting this news that I got from several reliable sources within Tesla, called me telling a short for posting that. Again, I'm surprised I need to restate that, but I am long Tesla. And it's not about being...
I'm also long Tesla.
And Seth is also a lot longer Tesla than I am.
I'm not a lot longer, but I'm a lot more.
Well,
honestly, I have no idea what you're at, but I know I put a lot in, so...
Yeah. I'm a fraction of what you have. But it's not about being long or short Tesla. It's just about doing the right thing here for the employees. It shouldn't be people are accusing each other of being long or short. Doesn't really matter at this point. There's no doubt that Tesla had an incredible quarter. There's no doubt that it's a big part of it is due to the employees working extremely hard. Should get compensated for it. That's it. Yeah, so what we were talking earlier about Elon saying something weird and then retracting it and then is stopping selling cars once they reach full self-driving. This plays into the whole... appreciating asset thing that Elon has been pushing for the last few months, that it makes no sense to buy a new car right now if it's not a Tesla vehicle because of the will eventually enable full self-driving capability of it. And it makes sense to a degree if they increase the price of the car once the full self-driving happened. So at first, Elon was asked, do consumers have limited time left to buy a Tesla car since price would have to go up several fold to balance supplies and demands once you solve the FSD? Elon said yes, and then he clarified that. Where's the clarification? Okay, here.
That's above.
Yeah, consumer will be able to buy a Tesla, but clearing price will rise significantly as a fully autonomous car that can function as a robotaxi several times more valuable than a non-autonomous car. So he's been estimating $30,000 in revenue a year. So the price of acquisition would match the revenue generating part of the asset, which makes sense. But what it means is that a consumer, like Tesla, will not sell cars at the consumer price anymore. Like what we're used to right now, between $40,000 and $100,000. But they do sell some cars at over $100,000. But let's stick to Model 3 between $40,000 and what goes up to $55,000, I think. $60,000 maybe even for the performance version fully equipped. That won't be the case anymore because it would generate so much money per year if you put your car on the Tesla network, the robotaxi service. It would generate so much money that it wouldn't make sense to sell the cars at those price. So what do you think, Seth? Is it just another pulling the trigger, like a dumb lever or something?
So two things. One, to unpack, Elon, I think, was a little quick on the trigger on the yes thing. Thankfully, it wasn't during trading hours. And I think that might be why he's tweeting more late at night, because I think he's not supposed to be tweeting during, when the stock is actively being traded. But so the guy asked, do consumers have a limited time left to buy a Tesla car? Mm-hmm. That was the question. And Elon says yes. That clearly indicates that, consumers aren't going to be able to buy the car at some point. Mm-hmm. Then the clarification, which was probably based on Jamie's post, was that, to be clear, consumers will be able to buy a Tesla, but the clearing price will be rise significantly. So, if a car is making $30,000 a year on its own, and theoretically, then it's worth a couple $100,000, right? And why would you sell a car for $50,000 when you can get, hundreds of thousands of dollars for the car? So that's the rationale.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's thinking a little too far ahead. There's a lot of questions.
Elon, no.
Yeah, a little bit. So a couple things. One is, it's not a zero-sum game. You're still going to need people to buy regular, or there's going to be a need for regular cars. Also, Uber's, they get trashed pretty easily. There's a lot of an equation to be added to that. So I don't think it's been totally thought out perfectly yet. And I also don't know if his timeline on when he's going to be able to sell robo taxis is going to be accurate.
Yeah, and while we were talking about that, let's quickly mention what happened with Tesla Autopilot team in the last few months. We previously reported on the restructuring of the Autopilot software team after the investor day in April, and saying that that Elon sort of took over the team and he changed the responsibility of a bunch of employees, including Stuart Bowers, was in charge of software. And there was a follow-up report this week about from the information that Bolt on a report that came out in May that listed clearly more employees that left and responsibility that changed. And they state that 10% of the team actually left as part of that restructuring, whether they quit or were pushed out. And they list a bunch. You can see on Electric, we put the whole list on. But it is a significant restructuring that saw, our understanding is that they pushed out or people left that were not on board with Elon's timeline. Elon seems either very confident about a timeline, or he wants people that do believe in it so that there's a chance of achieving it. Of course, the timeline is, again, full self-driving by the end of next year in terms of capabilities, and then whatever it takes to convince the regulators to approve it in different markets, which can, you know, who knows. But we previously reported on Milan Kovac that is now in charge of he seems to be in charge of software reporting directly to Elon. And Drew Baglino, a VP of engineering, who has a bunch of different responsibility, took over pad planning from a guy that left, Frank Havlak. Another quick ones like the simulation team. So Tesla, one of Tesla's big advantages, of course, with Autopilot is that there's hardware, software in the cars right now, in hundreds of thousands of cars all around the world that sends back data, very valuable data for Tesla to put into their machine learning system and improve Autopilot toward the goal of being a full self-driving system. But they also have a simulation system that they develop for other corner cases that they try to teach Autopilot to handle. And Ben Goldstein was in charge of that. Now he accepted a similar position at GM Cruise, GM's Cruise, which is now a GM division. CG Moore is now in charge of that. And Tesla very much promoted from within the company, which has been a trend lately. A bunch of like 5 years and more veteran of the Autopilot team have been promoted, except from Kovac, who's I've been there for 3 years, I think. Still a long time for Tesla, I'd argue. But yeah. Another thing that Elon tweeted this week was the Model S and X refresh that we expect is coming by the end of the year. Elon said, and I quote, "There is no refresh Model X or Model S coming, only a series of minor ongoing changes. Most significant change in the past few years was to use high-efficiency Model 3 rear-drive units as S and X front-drive units. That went into production 3 months ago." We reported on that, of course, when it happened. Was it 3 months ago? Yeah, I guess so. 3 months ago, yeah. There was also a suspension upgrade, like, and we did a few other changes. Some people would call that a refresh. Not Elon. And I think that comment is important in that context, where Elon just very much doesn't like the word refresh and very focuses on Tesla as incremental improvement, which I think it's fair. Like, Tesla does, unlike any other automaker, introduce incremental improvement in its car consistently. Doesn't wait for a model year change or a specific refresh. However, they have bundled a bunch of changes before. We remember some exterior changes and then battery pack changes and during the second quarter of 2016, the new front end, a few different exterior changes during that time too, at the same time. Most people will call that a refresh. Most other automakers will call that some refresh. A refresh is not a full new model, a full new different model. It's a refresh of an existing model. It's a new take, a few different changes. The changing a front motor, changing a suspension, and a few other things that were changed in the last update, a lot of people call it a refresh too. So I would keep that in mind when Elon says there's no refresh coming.
Yeah, and I mean, I think even the biggest Elon fanatic would kind of agree that the front fascia change on the Model S mm-hmm. is kind of like, you can kind of tell that was the old model and that's the new model.
Yeah.
Like, that in particular, that one thing, if nothing else, and you could argue a bunch of other stuff, but that one thing that changed the front, you could, like, you, in a second, you can tell that car versus the older car. And I think pretty much everybody agrees that that's a refresh.
The other thing you have to keep in mind is that Elon would never comment on an upcoming hardware upgrade, basically, that's coming relatively soon, because it would kill the sales of the car also. So he only comments about software features or long-term improvement in batteries and things like that. He doesn't comment on upcoming hardware changes. It did say no revamped interior coming, but again, that's all semantic at this point. Like, what does he mean by revamp? What does he consider a revamp anymore if he doesn't consider what we discussed before refresh? So we don't know. Of course, that plays into what we reported last year about the upcoming interior refresh. And we posted a bunch of pictures of that, of the early drawer design drawings of it. That all came from a very reliable source at Tesla that is still reliable to this day, and we still post important news from this day. So we're still very confident about that. At least it was the plan at the time. But that we posted that a year ago, and they said it was coming a year from now. So, of course, things can change over the course of a year. And especially with what happened to Tesla during the first quarter with the cash crunch and everything, that might have pushed the plans a little. That's very likely. And also, in line with Elon's comments about incremental improvements over bundling the improvements, they might introduce like just the horizontal screen first, things like that. And wait maybe for the fan-like design of like the Model 3. But there's other things that needs to come for sure that we were talking about. Tesla testing the 2177, a new batch pack architecture based on the 2170 cells of the Model 3 in Model
S. Didn't Elon specifically say that the Model S and X would not get the 2170 cells?
He said that like years ago, really. So I'm not sure. Like, again, things change. And Model S and X need to be able to charge at the same speed on Model 3 or higher. Again, brings me to another thing that I don't like about Tesla fans. They're accusing me of killing Model S and X cells by claiming that Tesla is going to upgrade them. Sure. Is that really what affects the cells more? Or the fact that the need to upgrade them to match the Model 3 capabilities? I think that's the bigger killer for cells, the Model S and X, that the Model 3 is just better right now with faster charging.
It's so much better in so many ways that I can't for the life of me figure out why anybody would buy a Model S right now.
It's just bigger, I guess. But
it's bigger, but like not much. And it's
a bit longer range, like, for the long range version too now.
A little bit. Like, yeah. Come on. It's really like the Model 3 is such a better car than the Model S.
Yeah. Also, to that argument, I reported that starting last year in July, and the sales really started just to be affected earlier this year, matching Tesla's announcement of the Supercharger V3 only being compatible with Model 3, at least the charging rate of the Supercharger V3 only being compatible with Model 3. So there's no doubt that that's what affecting the sales, that the Model S and X is not on par with Model 3 in terms of battery capacity right now. Not the fact that I'm saying that it's going to be, which I think is obvious to everyone, that Tesla is going to update its flagship lineup models with the latest capabilities. Now, whether Tesla is going to do it with, as we previously reported, that they've been testing the 2170 architecture on Model S and X, or are they going to wait for the Maxwell technology they're supposed to bring to production and talk about at the investor powertrain and battery event later this year? I don't know. That's a real possibility. Is it that's pushing the old timeline? Maybe. I think that would make sense. Again, we're putting the information out there. You guys do what you want with it, but blaming me for sales dropping when clearly there's other factors at play. I mean, it's definitely a factor, but nothing in comparison.
The Model 3 also was only on sale in the U.S. for such a long time that the Model S and X were still selling in Europe and China.
Good point,
So it wasn't like an immediate tail off.
Yeah.
I would like to see the numbers in the U.S. of the Model S and X and when they really dropped off quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I said that I've been saying this for a year and more than a year.
Yeah. You've like been saying before the Supercharger V2 came out that
I basically said it when they gave us a ride in the Model 3 at that Model 3 launch event. Like, there's no way that this isn't going to cannibalize the Model S. And you want.
And it took a while for you to be proven through, but eventually you were.
Right. But I mean, Tesla wants that to happen. Yeah. Like, you want to cannibalize your own. You don't want somebody else doing it.
Exactly.
So they probably aren't making as much on the sale of a Model 3 as a Model S, though. So that's kind of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But they can figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah, Model 3 is such a great car. And it's the best road trip car, which is what I reported this week based on my... I mean, what a segue, right?
Good one.
I rented a Model 3 on Thurow. They said, what do you say? Well, why do you do that, Fred? You have a Model 3. Yeah, but I'm in Los Angeles right now. I don't have a Model 3. My Model 3 is in good hands right now with my good friend Matt in Quebec. So we were debating, should we... We wanted to go to Vegas for the long weekend, me and my girlfriend, for a bunch of like cool activity that we had planned. But we were debating, should we fly there or should we drive there? And I was thinking, if we drive there, I kind of want a Tesla because it's going to be a lot of driving. Technically, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, it's like a four-hour trip. But with the long weekend, we knew it was going to be a ton of traffic, especially coming back because everyone is trying to come back on Sunday. Sometimes it can take 10 hours to do that four-hour drive. So I wanted to be to have the autopilot. If we hit stop-and-go traffic, I think autopilot is just wonderful in stop-and-go traffic. So I rented a Model 3 on Thurow, which my first time using Thurow was great service. Very easy. Picked up the car in Santa Monica and set out there. It was a long-range Model 3 rear-wheel drive, which is, of course, 210, 225, depending on the range that is listed. Originally 210. Tesla said that they upgraded it to 225 in a software update, but not everyone has been seeing 225 on a full charge. The car wasn't fully charged when I picked it up. The owner said that his excuse for it was that he only charged on the supercharger network, and the one in Santa Monica was locked to 80%, which is, of course, something we reported way back a few months ago. Tesla locked some of the supercharger to 80%. But you can override that, as we explained, if you just swipe the battery charge limit. So he didn't know that, but now he knows. But we had over 200 miles of range, which was plenty because the route between Las Vegas and LA is one of the most well-covered routes by a supercharger. There's six different superchargers when you exit the greater LA area through Las Vegas, six supercharger on that route. So it wasn't an issue at all. And with a full charge, you can actually get there in one charge. It's limit. Maybe you don't drive too fast, but you don't want to get there anyway in one drive because it's 4 hours. You want to stop to heat or to go to the restroom at some point, which is what we did. And what was great about that trip is overall, we ended up driving 10 hours going there, coming back. And we really didn't wait for charging a minute. Because going there, we stopped. We actually stopped twice because we ended up needing to go to the restroom just when we were supercharger. So we stopped for 15 minutes charge. And we were getting low on charge there. So we got to 143 kilowatts in just 2 minutes. And we ended up in the 15 minutes hiding over 100 miles of range. And then that was in the Yermo supercharger, which is just outside of Barstow. And then we ended up driving to Baker's because we started to get hungry. We figured like we probably get hungry in 40 minutes by the time we hit Baker. Sure enough, we started to get hungry, but we had to stop anyway because we ran into a little snafu here. It's right before the exit of the supercharger in Baker, we hit an exploded truck tire on the road. So I was on autopilot, but I don't think autopilot had any impact in that. In that situation, because I had my hands on the wheel, I was very attentive looking ahead. I actually saw two cars ahead. There was a pickup truck. Pickup truck did a weird move. So I'm like, oh, what's going on? So I was already alert that there was something going on, but I didn't see exactly what was happening. And the car in front of me ended up running right over the tire and ended up like moving around on the tire. So I saw, okay, that's when I saw, but I had only like a second and a half to react. And I just looked around me and we were going 65 miles per hour, but it was still heavy traffic around us. We're just like going quite at a decent speed within the traffic. And there was a car right behind me, car next to me. I'm like, I wasn't comfortable doing anything. So we just ran over the tire. And the impact was surprising. It was like a semi-truck tire. It was exploded. So it wasn't as hard. It was a little bit flexible, but it's still a lot of rubber that you hit at that speed. I thought that the bumper would be falling off really at the speed we hit, and the whole car lifted in the air when we ran over it. So I thought it was going to be pretty bad. We exited right away. We were like 500 feet from the exit. It was insane. We get to the supercharger. We stop. Surprisingly, not that much damage on the bumper. Really just a scratch, though a pretty significantly deep scratch. So that's definitely an issue. But I thought the bumper would be falling off, really. So that not that bad. And it the impact underneath the car ended up removing the underbody panel from the front lip of the car, which is pretty bad because all the air ended up getting into the underbody panel. Because it unscrewed a bunch of plastic screws underneath the car. And there's also another underbody panel behind that main panel, which is like a felt-like panel. This one also lost a screw. So it was flapping around, which wasn't that bad, really, because air gets underneath that panel anyway. It's just that if it's flapping around, it does hit efficiency, the aerodynamic of the vehicle for sure. But we managed to tape that up at least. We just bought like a aluminum foil tape at the truck stop next to the supercharger, and mainly my girlfriend Frances, because she's small enough to actually get underneath the car, so she taped that up, and we both managed by forcing the plastic underbody panel, we put it right back in the lip, so the body panel was still, the main one was still perfectly inside, so that was good. So we ended up just sitting back right back on the trip without too much issue. So that was good on that part. It's just that there's definitely some damage of the car, which we made a claim with Thorough. The owner of the Malfi, of course, wasn't happy about his car being damaged, but he was understanding that wasn't much I could have done to not hit that tire. And we just made a claim with the insurance, and we'll see what they say. But
let me get this straight. You hit a tire at highway speeds. That's the same thing that caused those Tesla fires.
Sometimes, about, yeah.
What, five years ago. And then you sent your girlfriend underneath the car to fix it.
At that point, I was very confident that everything was okay. Like, the car wasn't sending any alert error. It was still driving very well. So I was very confident that I wasn't throwing her in the fire.
Throwing her under the Tesla.
Under the Tesla fire, yeah. And we plugged the car to supercharger there. We didn't even really need to charge at this point. We could have made it really to Vegas, but we were, again, hungry. So, and we needed to stop anyway because of to fix that thing. So, I mean, actually, so you could argue, oh, yeah, that's why you didn't wait for charging. You were repairing your car at the same time. If we took maybe 10 more minutes than we were to just stop to eat, we still wouldn't have waited at all either way. Anyway, we made it to Vegas. We stayed at the Bellagio, which happens to have a destination charger. So we charge overnight there. Again, no waiting. And we had a full charge to come back. Coming back, especially coming back, you're downhill a little bit more. We could have easily made it to LA without even charging, which would have been great just because the Moultrie is so efficient. However, it was looking like a 6-7 hours drive from the traffic. So we're like, nah, we're going to have to stop anyway on the road for 6 hours. And what we ended up doing instead, we needed to charge. We actually do needed to charge because we tried to go around the traffic and go into further down into the desert, which was added maybe like 50 miles or so to the trip. So we needed to charge a little bit, which we did end up stopping at Barstow and hitting at the Chili's there. Because of the heavy traffic, I thought that maybe we're going to have to wait to even get a spot to charge the bar. So, and sure enough, when we arrived there, it was 16 stalls, and they were all occupied. But just as we pulled in, some people were leaving. So we just took their spot. And by the time we came out of the Chili, the car was already charged to 90%, which was more than enough to get back to LA by a long shot. Funny story, while we were in, just after we arrived, at the Bellagio in Las Vegas. If you guys don't know, there've been a bunch of earthquakes here in Southern California, and actually closer to Nevada, really, because we experienced the first one in LA, and it wasn't that bad at all. But when you're in Las Vegas, you're actually closer to the epicenter of the of the Earthquake, where it's at Ridgecrest, which is like a little east of Bakersfield. And we were on the 26th floor of the tower, the Bellagio. And if you know anything about tower engineering, they make it so that the tower actually swings when there's an earthquake to avoid damages, I understand. So we experienced that 7.1 earthquake from our room there. And it was swinging so much that we honestly thought that the whole building was going to collapse. And that was right after, like a few hours after hitting that tire, which we already like got a big boost, a big dose of adrenaline. And then a second time with that earthquake, which we ended up running down the 26 floors of the tower.
Of the stairway?
From on the stairs, because of course you think the building's gonna collapse, you're not gonna get in the elevator.
Right.
So we run down those stairs with a bunch of other people that were also panicking at the 26th floor, and then we get downstairs at the main casino floor, and everybody's like, "Why are you guys so sweaty? Why are you guys so panicking?" Because at the ground level, you don't feel it that much. I mean, you do feel like you see things shaking around you, but you don't. It's nothing like feeling like. We were at the window when it happened because we were looking at the fountains of the Bellagio. So we were looking at the nice spectacle of it. So we were right next to the window. So when the building actually starts swinging, we are leaning towards. So you can see like the whole entire building, which you're not supposed to see. So it was really panicking, but we ended up just relaxing for a few seconds downstairs, and then they're going, all right, I guess. Everyone is like, we were going to see the Cirque du Soleil. When I was running downstairs, I was thinking, oh shit, they're going to cancel the Cirque du Soleil now. I'm not going to see the show, but whatever downstairs, like, nope. I think it's just us who's panicking for nothing. But yeah, it was a fun trip. And, Mall 3 definitely made it a lot more fun, a lot smoother. And those 10 hours of driving was mostly all on autopilot. I mean, I love autopilot. I use it all the time. I always stay hands on the wheel. Looking ahead, but it does remove a lot of the stress, especially the stop and go traffic. The traffic aware cruise control is very good. Over those 10 hours, I did probably around 10 intervention where, especially like in construction zone or where there's, like a cement wall on the very close to the side of the road. Like sometimes the autopilot gets a little bit too close. And I don't think it was going to hit it, but I was not comfortable with it. So I took over, but, very, very good performance nonetheless. I mean, 10 hours, 10 intervention. I think it's pretty good for now, but of course it needs to get a lot better to achieve full self-driving. I also used the Navigate on autopilot for part of the trip, but I still think sometimes it suggests some lane changes that make no sense. It makes no sense, but it should make sense. In a perfect world where people actually drive correctly, where people use the left lane to pass, which of course in the US no one does. Like people, left lane is just a left lane, the right lane is a right lane for some reason, and it doesn't matter how fast
you are. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I hate it.
I mean, that was the first thing they teach you in driving school in Quebec. It was like, left lane is for passing. Get out of the left lane if you're not passing.
I love going to places where people actually understand that.
Yeah.
It's so much nicer to drive there.
So much nicer. So you end up having to pass on the right lane a bunch of times and everything. So it doesn't make sense to you to leave a lane or not. So the autopilot needs to predict how bad people are drivers, really. That's what it needs to get good at, which is probably a tough thing to program, really. Boy. All right. CHAdeMO adapter, now compatible for Model 3. I know we reported that before, but it was a bunch of false start with Tesla actually listing them incompatible, and then we're like, nope, sorry, our bad. It's actually not. This time, Tesla bring it back on the list of compatible adapters, and they confirmed to us that this time they didn't mess up. It actually is compatible. Not only it is compatible, but it's also... backward compatible, meaning that if you have one right now, if you bought one for like a Model S or X or something, and you want to use it on Model 3, it's going to work if your Model 3 is on the 2019.24.1 software update, compatible with that.
When did that update start rolling out?
The 24th week of of the year. I don't know where that was.
It's like halfway through the year.
Yeah.
So
like last month or something, like a few weeks ago.
Right. So theoretically, it should work for most people. That's a shame. I should have, because I have one of those. I should have tried that. I should have been trying it. It's funny, the place where near us that is a Chatamo site actually just got like 10 Tesla superchargers. So even going there now would be pointless for me.
Yeah, that was my take on it in the article. Like, it is it is going to be great news for a few owners who live in, like, I mean, I got one too when I had my Model S. Well, I still have my Model S, but now my parents are using it. And I used it twice. $450 for twice. I think my parents might have used it a few times. I'm not 100% sure on that. So maybe it got a little bit more money out of it. But there are definitely, like, I got messages from when I wrote that from people like in Quebec who are often driving to Gaspésie or to Abitibi or things like that. And for those people, that makes a big difference because there's just no supercharger there yet. I mean, there's one in the Rimouski, so you can probably get to Gaspésie and then charge on a destination there and come back.
I don't know what any of these words mean.
Yeah, Gaspésie is the tip of the eastern tip of Quebec. Okay. And it's not a very populated area, so there's no supercharger, but it is a somewhat popular route for tourism. Because have you ever heard of the Rocher Percé, the rock, like a big rock in the ocean with a hole in it, like a giant rock, and you can get a boat inside it?
Oh, interesting.
You've probably seen the picture before, you just don't know the by name, but that's where it is, so... So for a bunch of people like that, it would make sense. But for the most part, you want to use a supercharger. It's just more convenient. It's just cheaper. So, and what about the CCS charger? I think more people would have liked the CCS charger, especially adapter, I should say.
Especially if you can go over 50 kilowatts.
Exactly, because that thing is still limited to 50. So. But again, if you want one, $450. Not cheap.
I kind of feel like I wish I could donate mine to like a local CCS or a local Chatamo.
I know Fastnet does that. Well, they not donate, but they keep it at the charger. You mean? Yeah, they put a chain on it and then you stay at the charger. That makes a lot of sense because you just need one per charger. You don't need one per person, really.
Yeah, maybe I'll see about doing that in Vermont, where it's pretty much the only place we'll ever use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. Tesla will suggest travel destination within the in-car navigation system, said Elon's. That's nice. That was actually a suggestion from an owner on Twitter. That's always nice when Elon actually takes suggestions like that and then says that he will implement them. Someone suggested that I'm feeling lucky destination where it would be an option in the navigation system. You click I'm feeling lucky and then it suggests you a destination based on recommendation from other Tesla owners or directly like where Tesla owners in the area are driving. And Elon said that would be a good idea. And then later on, actually said, done, we're going to do it. He's going to do it. My feeling lucky destination and I'm feeling hungry destination where I assume that will be a local restaurant recommendation from owners. That sounds like fun. That sounds like some kind of TripAdvisor like competitor powered by the Tesla
community.
It'll
be interesting. I wonder how it'll work. I wonder what the logic will be. I don't know if is it going to be like you submit your information to Tesla or they just take your information? Like, hey, there's a bunch of Tesla drivers that like the in and out, you know, down the road. So let's take them there. Or is it going to be like they ask you, hey, can we use your restaurant where you end up eating dinner?
Yeah.
So
you already accept to share your data a lot with Tesla, I think. So you might actually be.
Yeah.
So someone on the electric article that we wrote posted, why am I always being suggested to go to the strip club? You're going to might get some weird suggestion too. It'd be interesting. Yeah. Around the same time, Elon also hinted that Spotify is finally coming to Tesla vehicle in North America. Our friends in Europe, or Tesla owner friends in Europe, are already having Spotify, but for years now, really, never made it to North America. We don't know exactly for sure, but it sounds like it might be a contractual situation because we have Slacker North America as a streaming service within Tesla cars. So we think Tesla might have a contract with them that they cannot break yet. if you look actually at the parent company of Slacker, Tesla's fleet is like 30-40% of their revenues. So if Tesla doesn't use Slacker anymore, it might be like bankruptcy for them or something. Like it might be that big of a deal. So it's a difficult situation to navigate for Tesla. But a Tesla owner again asked on Twitter, and Elon said, okay. So that's not like a very extensive answer, but it looks like he's actually agreeing that Spotify should come to Tesla's fleet in North America.
And theoretically, they're working on it behind the scenes. I mean,
they have been doing it for a while. We've seen it in the North American software push that all the framework was there for Spotify. They just never turned that to turn it on for the fleet. So the work should actually already be there. They just need to turn it on, I think, which they cannot do. They have to put a license with Spotify to do it. Tesla was also supposed to have its own streaming service at some point. Elon was talking about that, and we saw it in the software too at that time, but they put that project on the back burner, like it's not a priority really. And also last month, Elon said that they were working on a fun little music tool coming later and a tweak to the music app inside the vehicle. So that might be it. Though I wouldn't call it a tweak. Well, the music app inside Tesla car is more than just streaming. There's the radio, there's the TuneIn, there's a bunch of other stuff, but streaming is a big part. I actually don't mind Slacker that much. I think it's pretty good. If I really want to use Spotify, I just stream it via Bluetooth on my phone, so it's not that big of a deal. But yeah, I do see how more it would definitely be more convenient if it's integrated in the system. So I think a lot of people have been asking for that too.
I hate to be the one to say this, but I really like Android Auto and CarPlay. I kind of wish Tesla would at least have that as an option.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really nice to be able to get your tunes on the thing that you have in your pocket anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people are still asking for that, but I doubt it that Tesla will make it a priority. They're really pushing their own
UI. Also, what happened? I thought Tesla was going to do their own streaming music service.
Yeah. Yeah. We just mentioned that. That looks like it hit the back burner to the project, not priority.
Yeah.
All right, BMW finally officially unveiled the Mini Cooper Electric, Mini Cooper SE. Ooh. And it comes with 168 miles of range. And as we previously reported, it is based on the BMW i3 powertrain, actually even a little older version of the current one. And we don't have the price yet, but unless it's low, I mean, very low. It's not really appealing, right? I think you were very disappointed, Seth.
Yeah, so it's particularly frustrating. I mean, it's basically like the Honda E in its specs. Like, it's a city car that doesn't charge very fast. Basically, you know, pre-2016 kind of specs. But what's particularly frustrating about it is that 10 years ago, BMW had a Mini E. It was a limited release. Jamie had one. It wasn't like a full production run, but it was a car that people were driving. I mean, this is pre-Model S. You know, this is like in the Roadster days.
Mm-hmm.
They had a car, and I don't remember the exact specs, so I jumped onto Wikipedia, and they had the Mini E that had a 150 kilowatt motor. So that's 200 horsepower and a 35 kilowatt battery, which is crazy. Like, in 10 years, they've gone backwards. They have a slower motor and a smaller battery. And of course, you know, that was kind of a hack. So they only kind of rated that at 100 miles of range. And this one, the title is a little bit misleading on this one because, I mean, BMW says 168 mile range, but that's the,
WLTP.
It's the one, but it's actually the worst. It's actually the NEDC.
No, they can't do NEDC. Is it? Well,
so they did. They said 146 to 168 miles based on the WLTP cycle. But anyway, the real world is going to be 140 miles or so, which is you know, Honda E territory. But again, disappointing on all fronts. It charges at 50 kilowatts, so basically the same as the i3 or the Chevy Bolt, actually less than the Chevy Bolt. So just kind of, it's like hard to be enthusiastic about it, even though like finally there's an electric Mini E out again.
I tend to agree with you, except if they come up with a great price. Because
right,
you're right. Like it should be a lot bigger, lot more attractive specs than that. However, if you just accept the fact that it is a city vehicle, it's not a long range car, it's not for road tripping like that, it's for city driving. If the price is closer to 28, even then, like I mean, the Nissan Leaf is pretty cool with that. But let's say if it's $27,000, $28,000, then it becomes attractive.
I don't think it's going to be that low. I think.
Yeah, I doubt it either.
BMW but Mini.
They're going to bank on the $75,000, $7,500 tax credit.
Yeah.
And they're going to price it with that in mind, put it at like 35 or something. And then you're going to be able to get it for 28,000, but maybe at 25 if you have in a state like California.
Right. And here's the other thing. Like, okay, the battery and the motor are both like not exciting. But if it's going to be a city car and the battery and the motor are fine for city car, like they're going to be, you know, nobody's going to be too thrilled about it, but it's going to work out just fine. You got to make the charging faster, like 50 kilowatts. Yeah. Because city people, they're parking on the side of the road. They're going to, in this case, a CCS combo charger, like a gas station. They're not going to be able to charge overnight if they're true city people and they're parking on the side of the road or in a parking garage. So with this thing, you're going to be stuck at a charger for, you know, hours because it charges at 50 kilowatts and that's, you know, optimistic. And that's only to get 140 miles of range. So you're going to be doing that a few times a week or, you know, depending on your driving, you're going to be doing it quite often because you don't have that big range and you don't have the fast charging. So kind of disappointed all around. I don't know what I was expecting. Like, I guess I was hoping for at least a speedy one. Like it doesn't seem like it would be a lot of trouble to put a better motor in there. I mean, at least beat a Nissan Leaf. Come on. Like you're going to charge a premium. It's a BMW. Get it in front of a Nissan Leaf.
I wasn't that surprised because we knew that it wouldn't be the fifth generation because of course BMW now is working on the fifth generation electric powertrain technology. And where they have a new battery pack architecture that allows for more power, more energy density. And they have a new motor architecture too that is smaller and packed more power. But that's only starting next year. And the first car is going to be the BMW iX3. They just kept with the BMW i3 technology for this one. And it is such a great package, like a great format to electrify to the Mini segment. I mean, it's really the three-door segment.
Like you said, it's not even the brand new i3, like the 40 kilowatt hour battery. They're using an older i3, which also the i3 is also faster 0 to 60 than this car, even with the same hardware. So, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like they could have done better for sure. And
it's probably going to sell okay just because of the looks. You know, I know a lot of people just love the way it looks.
Yeah, Mini Coopers are probably
some sales there.
Popular for the looks. Again, if the price is good, I might change my mind. But I'm not keeping my hopes too high for that. All right, that's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for watching. Thanks for listening. Felt good to do it on Wednesday. We'll see if we keep going, but I think so. If you have any feedback on that, on this day, let us know. We're always willing to listen. We might change. I'm going back to Montreal next week too, so going back to a regular my studio, if you want to call it, with a little better audio and video quality. And we're also working on that. We're going to change some of our system because our current way to broadcast to you guys is Google Hangouts, which Google is apparently killing. We're gonna have to change that. So we're gonna see what to do. If you have suggestions for that, do let us know, because we are exploring a few things right now, but there's so many options that we're kind of lost in all. But yeah, that's me. That's it. Have a good one. Bye bye.